This is special coverage from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. 500-pound bombs from two U.S. Air Force F-16s killed Abu Musab al-Zarqawi and five other people in a house near Baqubah, about 35 miles northwest of Baghdad, yesterday. Iraqi and American officials say that his identity has been confirmed by fingerprints and that DNA confirmation is expected in a couple of days. Zarqawi was the best-known terrorist in Iraq, a man blamed for the deaths of thousands, but he was not the only leader of al-Qaeda in Iraq, and that, in turn, is hardly the only insurgent group. While Zarqawi rallied Sunnis for civil war against Shias, there are plenty of other factors deepening tensions between Iraq's two largest groups. But at a moment when opinion polls show support for President Bush's war at an all-time low, when U.S. military faces investigation of alleged atrocities in Iraq, this is a rare success. Here's the president speaking earlier today.
Zarqawi is dead. But the difficult and necessary mission in Iraq continues. We can expect the terrorists and insurgents to carry on without him. We can expect the sectarian violence to continue. Yet the ideology of terror has lost one of its most visible and aggressive leaders. Zarqawi's death is a severe blow to al-Qaeda. It's a victory in the global war on terror, and it is an opportunity for Iraq's new government to turn the tide of this struggle.
The news comes on the same day that Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki was finally able to fill key positions in his government, the Ministries of Defense, National Security, and the Interior. Over the course of this hour, we'll tell you what we know about how U.S. and Iraqi intelligence found the elusive Zarqawi. We'll bring you reaction to the news, more about Zarqawi's life and his bloody career, and how he fit inside al-Qaeda, how important his demise may be. We begin in Baghdad with Ellen Nickmeyer, the Baghdad correspondent for The Washington Post. Good of you to be with us this evening.
Yeah, thank you.
How is news of Zarqawi's death being received there in Baghdad?
I would say people are happy, but for the most part, they're quietly happy. There's not lots of celebrations in the street, anything like that. Down in Najaf, which is a headquarters of a base in Shia South, there's some people chanting in the streets from there, saying that they're happy Zarqawi is gone. And you see politicians on both sides of the spectrum here, on all sides of the spectrum, speaking positively about this.
So it received as good news, at least in and around Baghdad for the most part, yet we have to recognize that there were three bomb explosions in that city today, and at least 30 people are reported dead.
That's right. The prediction from everyone now is that we're likely to see a surge in violence as both the Iraqi resistance, the native Iraqi resistance, and the foreign fighters go out of their way to stage attacks to make clear that they're still here and they still are still going to have an impact.
And what do we know as yet about the other people who were killed inside that house with Abu Musab al-Zarqawi?
One of them is a person said to be a spiritual advisor to Abu Musab Zarqawi, and he was inside the house. We don't know the other lieutenants. We don't know much about the other lieutenants of al-Qaeda in Iraq or Zarqawi there. And apparently there are also one or two women and maybe one child, two children inside the house.
And yet the other factor in this is that there were a series of other raids in Baghdad shortly after that attack on that house near Baqubah last night.
That's right. U.S. military officials aren't saying much about those raids beyond saying that they've acquired a lot of information about the insurgency in those raids.
And so this operation clearly is ongoing.
That's right. I imagine that the information that they got from the stats last night's raids are going to lead them to a lot of avenues that they should pursue.
One final question, Ellen Nickmeyer, and that is the Iraqi government taking satisfaction in finally, months after the elections, finally filling out the cabinet today?
It clearly had a day of two hits of good news, and al-Maliki got to announce not only that they had finally formed a government, that Zarqawi had been killed, and this is going to be a tremendous boost to his government in terms of confidence and some credibility. And it's a question of seeing whether he'll keep the momentum or, like, the previous governments have squandered it.
Ellen Nickmeyer, thanks very much for joining us. We appreciate your time this evening.
You're welcome.
Ellen Nickmeyer, Baghdad correspondent for The Washington Post, with us by phone from Baghdad. Joining us now is Lieutenant General Gary North, commander of the 9th Air Force and U.S. Central Command Air Forces. General, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Neil, for having me.
And you were in command of the operation that hit the house near Bakuba last night?
Well, I would say that, there's an awful lot of people that were very involved in this for a long time. This, of course, the operation to find Zarqawi and bring him to justice has been a long operation, and everybody that was involved in it is very pleased that it was a very successful operation, particularly the Iraqi people and the people of the region that he has terrorized for a long period of time.
What can you tell us about the operation itself? For example, how far in advance did you get the targeting information?
Well, the F-16s, the U.S. Air Force F-16s were involved in this, were part of the routine scheduling of air power that flies over the skies of Iraq, providing intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance, and close air support to the ground forces, both U.S. ground forces and coalition forces. And so these two particular airplanes were up doing their task mission of the day, out doing a variety of things, searching particular areas of interest, of which this area where Zarqawi was has been an area of interest for a period of time.
So this was not a special mission?
No, this was not a special mission. They obviously knew, as do all of our aviators that are airborne, that there are particular areas we're interested in, and so when the intelligence developed, it allowed these two Air Force F-16s to go in, work the target area, and to be able to deliver with precise accuracy on an isolated safe house of Zarqawi's, two 500-pound bombs with extremely good results, as you have seen.
So was this would you describe this as a time-urgent target?
I would say it was a well-developed situation. We had 100% assurance that that's where he was, that intelligence was passed. That was developed through a long period of time, and, of course, many nations were involved in this, and the Iraqis were very involved in it. In fact, after the weapons were dropped, the Iraqi police were the first people on the target site to be able to do that site exploitation and determine that, in fact, there were Zarqawi and his leaders and followers were dead.
When you said there was 100% assurance, can you give us any information on who called either you or one of your subordinates to say we know for sure?
Well, the intelligence, of course, comes from a wide variety of sources in this. This was passed to the aviators involved through our intelligence network, and at which time they prosecuted the particular target house, again, with these two 500-pound bombs to take care of the terrorists.
As you said, this was one of the standard daily missions that these two pilots were on, but it must come as some satisfaction to finally get this person that they've been looking for so long.
I think it's with great satisfaction that the entire peoples of the world, especially those in Iraq and in Jordan and the American families that he has killed, family members, the thousands of Iraqis that he and his followers have killed, as you can tell, there is great rejoicing in the streets of Iraq, and I'm sure in the streets of many other countries in the region and the world.
General North, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Lieutenant General Gary North, the commander of the 9th Air Force and U.S. Central Command Air Force, is joining us. With us now from the Pentagon is NPR Pentagon correspondent Tom Bowman. And Tom, thank you for being with us. And I understand you've been able to develop a little more information about how U.S. forces knew that Abu al-Zarqawi was in that house. Excuse me, Tom Bowman, are you there? We're waiting for NPR's Tom Bowman, who's joining us from the... There he is. Tom Bowman, are you there?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we've got you now, Tom. We apologize for that. I understand you've been able to find out a little bit more about how U.S. forces knew that Mr. Zarqawi was in that house.
Well, it was a variety of information and efforts. The Iraqis helped. Also, they were able to use American technology. There was a Predator drone flying over the safe house, and these drones are 27 feet long, and they can fly up to 25,000 feet in the air. They're equipped with TV cameras, so they can send back real-time video of the scene. And we're also told there was signals intelligence. So that would be cell phones, for example, they picked up. It could be radio transmissions. It could even be a neighbor who said there's a bad guy living next door, and they were just able to pick that up. I'm also told that the Iraqi special forces, the Iraqi intelligence now, they're developing more expertise, and they're working better now with American forces. So I think all that together helped nail Zarqawi.
And was that drone, like the F-16s, according to General North, that just happened to be up in the air, no special mission for them? Did the drone just happen to be there?
We don't know that, but I would assume it probably was not. It did not happen to be there. This appeared to be a remote area, so I'm sure that once they got a sense of where he would be, they sent that Predator up to get live pictures just to see if anyone was fleeing, anyone going into the house. For example, there could have been a lot of innocent civilians in the area. They wanted to make sure they had a good target and no innocents would die and also no bad guys would be leaving.
Was there assurance, for example, were there eyeballs on the target or was all this done electronically remotely?
No, there were eyes on the target, as the military likes to say. There were special operations forces on the ground. They also had, I understand, Air Force attack controllers. Now, these are personnel that would be on the ground and would assist the F-16s in actually hitting the target. They would be equipped with radios, for example, and, of course, they would be assisted by that video stream from the Predator drone.
All right. Tom Bowman, stay with us. Answer your phone. It might be an important thing, but we'll be back with you after a short break and with more on the raid that killed Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, the leader of al-Qaeda in Iraq, in a raid last night in a village near Bakuba, north of Baghdad. I'm Neil Conan. We'll be back after the break. This is special coverage from NPR News. This is special coverage from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The leader of al-Qaeda in Iraq is dead. Abu Musab al-Zarqawi was killed in an airstrike northeast of Baghdad late Wednesday. Here's some of what we know about Zarqawi. He was born in Jordan on October 20, 1966, moved to Afghanistan in 1999 and linked up with al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden. In 2003, he emerged in Iraq as leader of a group called Monotheism and Holy War, a group that changed its name later to al-Qaeda in Iraq. Zarqawi claimed responsibility for two explosions in August 2003 that are seen as the start of the Iraqi insurgency, including an attack against United Nations headquarters in Baghdad that killed 22 people. It's also thought he personally beheaded American hostages in 2004. We've posted more information about Zarqawi and the operation that led to his death at our website, npr.org. Still with us from the Pentagon is NPR Pentagon correspondent Tom Bowman. Let me ask you a little bit more about the intelligence that led to this raid on Zarqawi. We've been told Jordanian intelligence was involved. We've been told Iraqis were involved, but this was a man who had a $25 million bounty on his head. Did people in his own organization, do we know, did they sell him out?
Well, we don't know if they sold him out or what happened. We were told this morning by Major General Bill Caldwell in Iraq that members of his network were helpful here. So that doesn't, we don't know if people ratted him out, let's say, or the other thing could be they've captured and killed scores of folks in Zarqawi's network. It could be under interrogation, these folks were quite helpful. But we don't have a sense of exactly how this came about.
And do we have any information on what intelligence, if any, may have been gleaned from the by Iraqi police and others who arrived at that house after the raid?
Well, what we do know is they were able to use information and mount 17 additional raids after the attack on the safe house. And again, General Caldwell today told us that they have found a treasure trove of information that would help in future operations. But of course, he wouldn't go into that detail. Usually when they make attacks of this nature, they'll send in a special team that will pick up laptop computers, cell phones, documents, and also what they call pocket litter. Pocket litter. What was on the dead person's clothing? It could be cards, information, addresses, phone numbers. A lot of that can be quite useful.
Tom Bowman, thanks very much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Neil.
NPR Pentagon Park correspondent Tom Bowman with us. Both supporters and critics of President Bush's strategies in Iraq have hailed the strike that killed al-Zarqawi. It remains to be seen what, if any, lasting effect it may have. Joining us now is retired General John Batiste. He led the 1st Infantry Division in northern Iraq in 2004-2005. Major General Batiste, thanks very much for being with us.
Yeah, Neil, thank you. It's good to be back with you.
How good is this news?
Oh, I think it's tremendous. It's great news. But we need to remember that Zarqawi was but a cog in a very complex insurgency. We still have a major insurgency to deal with.
And those 17 other raids that Tom Bowman reported on, they may have helped reduce al-Qaeda in Iraq. Again, we don't know for sure, but again, that is not the only insurgent organization inside Iraq.
Well, that's correct. There's a huge insurgency in Iraq, much of it homegrown, Sunni on Shia and Arab on Kurd. Incredibly complex country. You know, but all of this, to me, I keep going back to this notion that we've got leaders who have dodged responsibility. And our Secretary of Defense took America to war with the wrong war plan, insufficient troops. He never anticipated or accounted for the insurgency, which was an absolute certainty and fully addressed in the Central Command's planning. He refused to acknowledge the potential for this. So as a result, we ended up in Iraq at a very crucial point in time in April and May 2003 when we could have nipped this in the bud, when we could have crushed the insurgency from day one. So now we're having to deal with it.
Let me ask you a bit about, we don't know tactical details at this point. We don't know how much time there was between the certainty that Abu Musab al-Zarqawi was in one particular place and how much time they had to carry out the raid. But if you'll recall, the Uday and Qusay Hussein, the sons of Saddam Hussein, died in a blazing gun battle with U.S. forces. This was quite different. This was a bomb falling from the skies.
Right. It's certainly a combined operation, I'm sure, where there were all of the tools in our toolkit of military capability were used to include precision munitions from an F-16, I assume.
If somebody had a choice over how to mount this raid, would you prefer the symbolism of a strike from the sky or the perhaps more vivid atmospherics of a gun battle?
Oh, I think that the commander would have used whatever was appropriate. He chooses what to use in that kit bag.
So whatever's appropriate, and maybe yep. Fearful that somebody may run out of there quickly.
Whatever. I mean, but there's lots of tools in the kit bag and our incredible military who are absolutely doing a great job in Iraq despite the dismal leadership coming out of the Department of Defense at the highest levels.
Well, you talk about poor leadership. Nevertheless, this does present an opportunity. We've heard expectations that followers of Mr. Zarqawi may mount a wave of attacks to let us all know that they're still there. Yet this does present an opportunity if it can be taken advantage of.
Sure, absolutely. This is great news that we have got Zarqawi. But trust me, he's got lieutenants that are going to pick up and continue to fight. And we've got some work in front of us to finish this insurgency, which is a lot more than just al-Qaeda. Remember, there's a homegrown insurgency here, Sunni, Shia, Arab, Kurd, tribal implications, criminal gangs, goes on and on. This is a terribly complex insurgency that was allowed to grow from very small back in April, May 2003, when we could have dealt with it if we had sufficient troops on the ground. And if we had the Iraqi security forces and institutions still in place to crush the insurgency in its infancy, secure the ground, secure the borders with Iran and Syria, train the Iraqi security forces, secure the oil infrastructure, secure the lines of communication, it goes on and on.
Mm-hmm.
Commanders over there for the longest time have had to compensate for a shortage of troops by shifting coalition and Iraqi security force elements, battalion, brigade level, 800 troops, 5,000 troops, from one contentious area to another to counter growing threats in places like An-Najaf, Tal Afar, Samarra, Ramadi, Fallujah. The list goes on and on. We were certainly successful in the short term, but the minute we completed a mission and redeployed forces back to where they came from, the insurgents reoccupied that vacuum, and the cycle repeated itself over and over again. This is no way to fight an insurgency. We've got an Army and a Marine Corps which remain under-resourced and overcommitted.
General Batiste, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Major General John Batiste, retired, speaking with us from his home. One of Zarqawi's legacies is his use of the Internet as a tool for terrorism. His webcast messages and brutal decapitation videos played a big role in his propaganda and recruitment efforts. Rita Katz is founder of the SITE Institute, or Search for International Terrorist Entities. She was born in Iraq and is the author of Terrorist Hunter, the extraordinary story of a woman who went undercover to infiltrate the radical Islamic groups operating in America. She regularly uncovers plans and information on the Internet related to terrorism. She joins us now from her office at the SITE Institute. Very good of you to be with us today.
Thank you.
And I wonder, what are you seeing on terrorist websites following the death of Zarqawi today?
Oh, well, as you can imagine, the talk of the day is all about Zarqawi since 3 a.m. our time when we first heard about it. You know, it's very mixed. Some are very happy. I'm talking about the jihadi online community, and they're happy because Zarqawi reached his martyrdom. He is, you know, he died the way he wanted to die, so they are happy for him. They are glorifying his heroism, and they are promising, all of them, that the jihad will continue. This is just the beginning, and the fact that you killed Zarqawi doesn't mean anything. And the slogan that you can find today is, "We are all Zarqawis."
Mm-hmm.
So that's in general.
And as you say, specifically warning vengeance in return for his death.
Yes, definitely. They are, and they are promising that the war is not going to stop. And in fact, they are warning and threatening that they will continue mainly the kill of the Shias, not limited in Iraq, but everywhere. And they are calling upon scholars that supported Zarqawi, calling upon his followers to continue with what he started with. So the call is, wherever you are, if you supported Zarqawi, come and help us in killing the infidels and their supporters, which are the Shias.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Zarqawi, as we all know, militated for civil war against jihad, against the Shias inside Iraq, and devoted a lot of his energies, a lot of his bombs to Shiite targets. Yet this was not entirely popular.
He is extremely popular among the jihadis because we have to remember that most of the jihadi online community that we are familiar with that exists actually is made of Sunnis, Salafists, that they don't have a great love to the Shias. And there's no doubt that what Zarqawi did and the campaign against the Shia is very different from the campaign that Osama bin Laden and Zawahiri were actually running. They always said, you know, at this stage, we have to work, all of us together, and we have to work with the Shias. And that's, therefore, we saw a close relationship between, for instance, Hezbollah, the Shia organization supported by the Iranians, and Osama bin Laden's organization. Nowadays, Zarqawi run a huge campaign against Hezbollah, attacked them for being, calling them Shia supporters, calling them infidels and non-believers because they are part of Iran and the Shia community.
And we also did see Hamas, a statement from the Palestinian government describing Zarqawi as a martyr today and support for
That's
him.
That's true. Yeah, it was just circulated online on various message boards and calling for people to take revenge of his death.
Mm-hmm. Is there any sign at this point of a possible successor?
Actually, the one that, you know, right after his death, after Abu Mas'ab al-Zarqawi's death was confirmed by al-Qaeda in Iraq with a communique that they posted, the campaign of the online jihadi started with nominating his successor as Abdurrahman the Iraqi. Abdurrahman al-Iraqi was known to us for a long time as being the deputy of al-Qaeda in Iraq. And right now, and he had issued in the past audio messages and written messages, and he's actually the one who signed today the communique indicating that Zarqawi was killed. His form Al-Qaeda in Iraq is the most known to the jihadists. And right now there is a campaign throughout the jihadi message boards asking for his nomination as the successor. So I guess we're going to have to wait and see. And since we're talking about the Internet and Zarqawi, you know, campaigns like this on the Internet means a lot to Al-Qaeda in Iraq. That was one of the things that really raised them to become what they are today as a result of the Internet. It was never a one-sided communication. It was always that Zarqawi and his people greatly responded to the calls of the jihadi online community. So for me, when I see something like this, then I see a call so solid and so strong coming from the jihadis, most likely Al-Qaeda in Iraq will have some kind of response to that.
Rita Katz, thanks very much for being with us. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Rita Katz, founder of the Site Institute, an independent group that studies, tracks, and analyzes international terrorists, joined us from her office there. With us now from his office here in Washington is Ivo Dalter, Senior Fellow in Foreign Policy Studies at the Brookings Institution. Nice to speak with you again.
Good to be here, Neil.
The death of Zarqawi gives President Bush a long-awaited and relatively rare military success. What effect do you think it's going to have on public attitudes? We've just seen new polls coming out today showing that his policies are at an all-time low.
Well, of course, those polls were taken before this happened. But I wouldn't be surprised to see a bit of a bump up in public opinion with regard to Iraq. But over the long term, since I don't think that the capture, the killing of Zarqawi is going to have a material impact on what happens in Iraq, I think over the long term, American public, which has basically concluded that this war was the wrong war, that it's not going well, and therefore we ought to shift gears, that the American public is going to stick to that line.
So if the seemingly unrelenting violence in Iraq continues to be unrelenting, and there's every reason to expect that it will be, the euphoria will fade quickly.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, remember what happened just last month. 1,400 bodies showed up at the Baghdad morgue. That's over nearly 50 people each and every day. And that's just Baghdad, and that's just what's coming into the morgue. The number of people that are being killed inside Iraq now is escalating each and every day. Military commanders were reported to have told the New York Times that perhaps 100 people were being killed each and every day. That's 30,000, 35,000 a year. I don't see the American public looking at that and saying, gee, this is a great success. Let's continue down the road that we're on.
Mm-hmm.
Let's stay the course. I think they will want to see a fundamental shift in policy.
Yet a breathing space in Washington, certainly, and in Baghdad as well, maybe.
Well, yes, and particularly in Baghdad, where not only was there an announcement of Zarqawi's death, but also the fact that the final security ministries have now their own ministries. So you have, for the first time, 6 months after the election, the announcement that the cabinet is complete, and the hope that, therefore, some deal with regard to at least the security issues between the Sunnis and the Shias and the Kurds will have been struck. Again, we'll find out whether in the implementation this will stick, but it does give the Iraqi government and does give the president a breathing space, but whether that's longer than a couple of weeks, we'll have to see, and the violence, I'm afraid, will end it pretty soon.
Ivo Dalter, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Ivo Dalter, a senior fellow in foreign policy studies at the Brookings Institution here in Washington, D.C. Joining us now with some reaction elsewhere in the Islamic world is Ahmed Rashid, a journalist and author of three books, the most recent called Jihad, The Rise of Militant Islam in Central Asia, and he joins us from his offices in Lahore in Pakistan. And Ahmed Rashid, good to speak with you.
Thank you.
Is this big news in Pakistan?
Yes, it's very big news. It's certainly heading all the newscasts on the TV channels. It'll be in the papers front page tomorrow. It's very big news. And of course, there's a lot of speculation now as to whether the Americans will be able to get Osama bin Laden.
And of course, Osama bin Laden, number one on the wanted list. Mr. Zawahiri, his number two would be number two, perhaps Mullah Omar, number three. But Mr. Zarqawi was right up there.
Well, certainly. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of Pakistanis have been very horrified also by the kind of sectarian violence that Zarqawi had unleashed between Shia and Sunni. Pakistan is a country which has very bloody sectarian violence also, largely carried out by extremist Sunni groups, who are linked to Al-Qaeda and who certainly have been carrying out attacks even quite recently. But we have seen nothing compared to the kind of mayhem and bloodshed that has taken place by Al-Qaeda against Shias in Iraq. And this has, I think, really horrified people because it seems to be completely mindless. And Zarqawi seems to have, at times, you know, destroyed his own base of support. If we consider, for example, not just the attacks on Shias, but the attacks on the Jordanian hotels last year, at a point when, amongst many people in Jordan, he was quite popular. Then, you know, by doing that, he just kind of destroyed his reputation in Jordan, too.
We're going to have to take a short break. If you can stay with us, we'll have some more questions for you in just a minute, Ahmed Rashid.
Thank you.
We'll be back after the break. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to special coverage. Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, the leader of al-Qaeda in Iraq, was killed last night in a raid by two American F-16s, which dropped two 500-pound bombs on a home in a group of houses near the town of Bakubab, north of Baghdad. More after the break. You're listening to special coverage from NPR News. This is special coverage from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. President Bush called Abu Musab al-Zarqawi's death a severe blow to al-Qaeda and a victory in the war on terrorism. He said it is an opportunity for Iraq's new government to turn the tide in this struggle, though the president also acknowledged that sectarian violence would likely continue in Iraq. We're speaking with Ahmed Rashid, a journalist and author of books about Islam and about jihad, his most recently Jihad, the Rise of Militant Islam in Central Asia. He's with us from Lahore in Pakistan. And just before the break, Ahmed, you were saying how people in Pakistan itself deplored the sectarian violence that Mr. Zarqawi had unleashed inside Iraq. What are you hearing from others? Is he likely to be held up as a martyr to be avenged, or is this the elimination of a problem?
I think to many people it is the elimination of the problem, but obviously, you know, there is a very strong fundamentalist lobby here, Islamic fundamentalist lobby here, people who are fighting in Kashmir, who are fighting with the Taliban in Afghanistan, there is support for religious parties. And for them, I think Zarqawi was a kind of double-faced character. They admired him standing up to the Americans and killing Americans. But I think even a lot of them were very appalled at the kind of violence he unleashed against the Shias.
He had a sort of independent organization that was loosely allied to the al-Qaeda leadership, believed to be either in Pakistan or just across the border in Afghanistan. What is going to be the subsequent organizational effort, do you think?
Well, you know, we know from this correspondence that took place between Zarqawi and Ayman al-Zawahiri, the Egyptian, the number two to Osama bin Laden, that bin Laden thought that the tactics being used by Zarqawi were over the top and were too brutal and were putting off a lot of people. And he stated that very publicly, even though he did declare that Zarqawi was representing him in Iraq. So I think, you know, I think even bin Laden realized that as far as al-Qaeda's propaganda in the Middle East was concerned, Zarqawi was doing as much damage as he was doing any good, you know, by killing Americans. So again, even for al-Qaeda, I mean, certainly they will treat it, you know, as a martyrdom, and certainly the danger is that there will be revenge killings in his name taking place now in the next few days, not just in Iraq, but perhaps in other places in the Middle East and even in Pakistan, perhaps. But it must be said that even the extremist camp was very divided about his policies and his strategies, and they even questioned whether he really had a strategy.
That's what I was just going to ask you about. Does he leave an ideological legacy?
No, not at all. I mean, you know, if you look at the way al-Qaeda has tried to play the West, play the Americans, divide Europe and America, play the Middle East. What it did during, by carrying out the bombings in Spain, being able, literally as they claim, that, you know, we were able to topple the Spanish government of the day. Now, Al-Qaeda has played a very strategic political game, over the last 4 to 5 years in many parts of the world. And certainly Zarqawi could not be, was never part of that, you know. It was this very, resistance to the American occupation in Iraq, but it was this mindless killing of fellow Muslims that really, I think, antagonized a lot of people.
Ahmed Rashid, thanks for being with us. We know it's late there. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Ahmed Rashid, journalist and author most recently of Jihad, the Rise of Militant Islam in Central Asia, with us from his home in Lahore, Pakistan. Joining us now is Adid Dawisha, professor of political science at Miami University of Ohio, author of Arab Nationalism in the 20th Century, From Triumph to Despair. Professor Dawisha joins us from the studios of member station WMUB in Oxford, Ohio, and nice to speak with you again.
Hey, good afternoon.
And I hear that's a telephone, so apparently you're not at the radio station there. But anyway, what effect do you think Mr. Zarqawi's death is likely to have on the government, which was enabled to, the new prime minister, Mr. Nouri al-Maliki, able to announce the death of the most wanted man in Iraq today and announce the completion of his government?
That was rather fortuitous, wasn't it, for the prime minister, that the two events would occur simultaneously. I think that it would certainly give them some confidence in the future. I mean, the point is that Zarqawi had been a thorn in the side of all governments, and in a way was a manifestation of the inability of Iraqi governments to provide security for the Iraqi people. So the fact that they were able, or at least in collaboration with the Americans, they were able to kill this most hated and detested man in almost most of Iraq would be certainly a plus for them and would be a nice omen for the beginning of the full cabinet. But mm-hmm. We shall see.
Yes. Of course, Mr. Zarqawi was an agent of Sunni on Shia violence. On the other hand, the Iraqi Interior Ministry is being seen more and more as an agent of Shia on Sunni violence. What does the Prime Minister need to do now to erase that image?
Well, the Prime Minister has to make sure that the newly appointed Minister of Interior diverts from the policies of his predecessor and creates a ministry that is at least perceived by Iraqis to be neutral, so that, first of all, he should stop the infiltration of the Shiite militias in the ministry. And that is going to be a tall order, but he has to do it. And secondly, the ministry will get some kudos if it raids Shiite military headquarters and operations as often as it does with Sunnis.
And there are, as you mentioned, Shia militias, principally that led by Muqtada al-Sadr, that have become a problem for the government, not just in the Baghdad area, but in and around Basra, the important oil city in the south.
In Basra, there's been major fights amongst the various Shiite groups, basically all fighting for turf, but also fighting for the very lucrative oil smuggling operations that's been going on. And what is interesting about Basra is that the groups that make up the United Iraqi Alliance, which is the main Shiite alliance that has the majority in parliament, the groups that make up this alliance has in fact fighting each other and killing each other in Basra over turf and over the smuggling. So the Ministry of Interior, by the way, this new Minister of Interior belongs to one of the groups, Al-Fadila. He has to show himself to rise above this sub-sectarian fighting that's going on in Basra. Again, it's not very clear to me whether he'll be able to do that. We'll just have to wait and see when the next crisis happens how he responds.
And the other factor that's been going on inside Iraq this week in particular has been the release of some of the prisoners, hundreds indeed, of the prisoners being held. Of course, tens of thousands are held, more are expected to be released. All of this should give the Prime Minister, as we were talking about earlier, a bit of a breathing space, but he needs to move quickly. He can't sit down quietly.
Yeah, all this prisoners' release may very well have been part of the bargaining that was going on over the allocations of the various ministries to the various groups and so on. As you rightly say, this will give him breathing space. It would be a good omen, and so on. But Iraq is in real desperate straits at the moment, and he needs to act quickly, and he needs to act decisively. That is the one quality that the ex-prime minister, Mr. Ja'fari, did not show, and Maliki has to show that he can act decisively.
And exercise the power that he has, although at least in the structure of the government, as we look at it, the prime ministership in Iraq is not the most powerful position in the world.
Well, that's actually maybe true, but in fact, as what has been happening over the last year and a half, the power that is shared between the president and the prime minister is shifting from one to the other, dependent on the personality of the occupant of that office. The one reason why the president, President Talabani, seemed to have been more authoritative was because of the weak personality of Mr. Ja'fari. If Maliki actually comes to the office with a determination to act as a prime minister, then I think that the power constellation will shift towards him. He can do that by proving that he will not be beholden to any of the various Shiite groups that are operating, and certainly will not be beholden to the United Iraqi Alliance, that he is now the prime minister, not a member of a party. If he can do that, I think the power shift will certainly go his way.
Adeed Dawisha, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
Adeed Dawisha, political science professor at Miami University of Ohio, author of Arab Nationalism in the 20th Century, From Triumph to Despair, and he spoke to us today from his office there. Joining us now is Marianne Weaver. Her article, The Short Violent Life of Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, appears in the July-August 2006 issue of the magazine Atlantic Monthly, and thanks very much for being with us today. She joined us from her home in New York.
Thank you very much for having me.
And what a fortuitous piece with a few changes of verb tense. This could have served as Zarqawi's obituary.
Well, you know, it was so extraordinary because I went to bed last night thinking everything is under control. The magazine is out. I don't have to follow him online anymore. Opened my computer this morning and I guess it is the obituary.
Tell us a little bit about Mr. Zarqawi. I think it was significant that even as late as today, an American military briefer in Baghdad misidentified him as an Egyptian.
You know, Zarqawi has always been as much myth as man. For many, many years, the Americans said he was one-legged. Then he appeared in a videotape, clearly in possession of both his legs. Then they said he was a Jordanian-Palestinian, when in fact he was a member of the Bani Hassan, one of the most significant Bedouin tribes in the Middle East. He has been reported dead at least five times that I'm aware of. Zarqawi is a man who essentially sprang from nowhere. And one of the ironies is that he really created himself in America's wars. First Afghanistan, then Iraq. He comes from an industrial city in Jordan called Zarqa, born into a lower-class family, although members of a significant tribe. He began life as a thug. He was involved with gangs. He was sentenced to prison at the age of 12 for sexual assault, according to Jordanian intelligence sources. Everyone whom I met in his hometown said this guy was ruthless, he was a troublemaker, he had nothing positive to recommend him to anyone until he went to Afghanistan.
And he was transformed, you say, by the war in Afghanistan, by the jihad there.
Exactly. He actually arrived after the Soviets and the Americans had left in December of 1989, but he fought during the war's second phase. It was in Afghanistan where he was introduced not to Osama bin Laden, but to the military leadership, training leadership of al-Qaeda. He was exposed for the first time in his life, and I should add that he was not at all religious when he went to Afghanistan in December of 1989. In fact, he had just, as they say, quote, returned to Islam 3 months earlier.
Hmm.
But in Afghanistan, and he was there from December of 89 until 93, he had contact with some of the most rigid jihadists and Salafists on earth.
Now, he then spent some time back in jail in Jordan, where you say he really did emerge as a leader. He went in as a prisoner and emerged an emir.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. He was, again, his tribal credentials were very, very important to him in prison. He also had, at that point in his life, met his main ideological mentor, a man by the name of Sheikh Abu Muhammad al-Maqdisi. He's one of the leading Salafist clerics alive today. Zarqawi al-Maqdisi met in Afghanistan, returned to Jordan, were imprisoned together, and I talked to a number of Zarqawi's fellow inmates, and he really transformed the prison block into a gang. He was the one to whom everyone had to come with requests. Who would cook today? Who would do the laundry? Who would lead evening prayers? It was in prison that he became an absolutely rigid Salafist. So the prison years were extremely important because, number one, he found his, quote, religion. Number two, for the first time, he was really organizing men in large numbers. And number three, he was recruiting a lot of fellow inmates to his cause. Most of the so-called jihadists who followed Zarqawi to Iraq were common criminals, members of street gangs, people whom he had met in prison formed the core of his leadership.
He does go back to Afghanistan, though, and there he meets, finally, Osama bin Laden.
Mm-hmm.
And you say he hated him.
It was mutual loathing at first glance. Neither bin Laden nor Zarqawi are modest men. And it was two irreversible forces colliding head on. Bin Laden obviously is not used to being criticized. Zarqawi criticized bin Laden because bin Laden was not waging holy war against the Shiites, and because bin Laden was providing his fighters to the Taliban to try to overthrow the Northern Alliance. It's very ironic because everything that Zarqawi piously criticized bin Laden for doing is precisely what Zarqawi did to the nth degree in Iraq, i.e. massacring Shiites, and also bringing foreign fighters into what he perceived to be a jihad. Bin Laden was taken very, very aback by him. He thought he was conceited. He thought he was pushy. He realized that his religion was absolutely learned by rote with no perception of any detail. And had it not been for bin Laden's present military chief, Saif al-Adel, who was then his chief of security, history could have been written very differently.
He obviously then returns to Iraq, where he plays an important part and finally does bow his knee, at least on paper, to Osama bin Laden. There are other disputes that the two men have over the years, and Ayman al-Zawahiri sends him a letter. We're not quite sure if it's authentic, but it seems to be perhaps telling, a letter of criticism. We just have a minute or so left with you. What legacy do you think Mr. Zarqawi will leave behind?
You know, I think it will be very brief and very limited, because Zarqawi is not at all like bin Laden. Bin Laden will be survived by al-Qaedaism. It's an ideology. It's a concept. There's no such thing as Zarqawiism. A very high-ranking Jordanian intelligence official told me, when I asked him precisely that question, if Zarqawi is captured or killed tomorrow, the Iraqi insurgency will go on. He said, whatever Zarqawi is will die with him. And I think that's true.
Mary Ann Weaver, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you. very much for having me.
Marianne Weaver wrote the short, violent life of Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, which appears in the July-August issue of the Atlantic Monthly. Stay tuned to NPR for more coverage of this story as details emerge later today on newscasts and, of course, on All Things Considered. You've been listening to special coverage from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.